As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Touchdown, Washington! What a play call!
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
So big Commanders stadium news broke late yesterday. The possibility of the Commanders moving back to Washington, D.C. is becoming more real. No deal is finalized yet, but the two sides are close to a deal worth more than $3 billion to build a stadium at the RFK Stadium site. That's according to NBC for Washington. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and the Commanders have preliminary plans in place that involve the team paying for the majority of the costs for the stadium build. The current plans have the money given by the city going towards building up the rest of the 180-acre development.
I think it's awesome news. It's what the fans want. It's open line Thursday. Mm-hmm. You can chime in at 800-636-1067. We also put it up as our Junkies poll of the day, brought to you by Surfside. Iced tea and vodka and Surfside lemonade and vodka. They're the perfect addition to any gathering. Each can only 100 calories, zero carbonation. That means easy sipping. You can find Surfside at your local bars and in convenient variety 8-packs at your local liquor stores. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly. You can vote at Junks Radio. Are you pumped for the news? I think almost everybody is. They wanted the team to get back to the RFK site. And I know EB during the break was concerned that it's a small site. I think it's impossible to know what it's going to look like. I think if you had said 20 years ago, we're going to build a baseball stadium where they've built the baseball stadium, you couldn't imagine all the build out.
Well, I know
in the years after.
Look, I'm happy that everyone's happy, and it doesn't mean anything because I'll go to a few games before I die. But it's too small.
You'll go to maybe two or three.
I'll go to a few, but it's too small. Can't even tailgate. And to me, that's a huge part of the experience, especially going to football games. So, you know, when that issue was raised, I mean, we've all always known it's too small. It's been that way forever. Part of the attraction is having all the infrastructure around it and all the restaurants and everything. I just don't see how that area can accommodate all that stuff. So,
well, yeah.
I mean, it's great that we're playing at the old site, and I'm going to root for them just as hard as ever. But to me,
I think that's what JP's saying. You just don't, you can't envision what it's going to look like. But when it's if it happens, it's going to look good.
It'll look great.
Oh, it's going to look
but
amazing.
But you're not going to be able to tailgate, which I think is a big deal.
They'll be true. Maybe they'll have just a small section for that. Who knows? But they'll have a lot of bars and restaurants.
They'll have some. Yep. I don't think there's a ton of room for that surrounding infrastructure that we're used to.
We don't know exactly what it's going to be. But again, what did this place look like 20 years ago? And then 15 years ago,
this
and 10
place?
Years ago, and even 5 years ago, it's completely changed because
that,
the stadium.
They don't have the space. I mean, I don't think they have the zoning. I mean, you know, I just don't see how
over
it's
time
work.
I think that'll happen. And
hopefully.
Look, I mentioned this before.
We'll all be dead.
I went to the Intuit Dome,
yeah,
Intuit Arena,
dome.
Whatever
Intuit
it is, dome. In LA for UFC, And in front of the arena is amazing.
Yeah.
The inside, there's facial recognition and all this modern stuff. But on the outside, there's kind of a fairgrounds. And so you might say, well, there's no tailgating, but there were food trucks. I think there'll be something that'll be appealing to some people. Now, the old school tailgaters that want to park their RV and be there for 6 hours, they're kind of screwed. But you're still going to be able to get beer. You're still going to be able to get food. It's probably just going to be more expensive.
I think the big, well, it'll definitely be expensive. The bigger takeaway to me is that
$2.5 billion.
Josh Harris and company are ponying up the majority of the money, it looks like, from the reports for the stadium. And most owners don't do that. They're looking for as much public money as possible, as they can get. And that doesn't seem to be the case here.
So now, they're saying they're responsible for it, and I'll give them credit. But I believe they're going to get a big portion of it from the NFL. Because doesn't the NFL allocate money to new stadiums?
I think they do, but still, like, that's a major commitment by Josh Harris and the owners.
They're still going to have to come out of pocket a decent amount.
Yeah,
sure.
Look, I think Josh Harris, look, Dan Snyder was a local guy who was the owner of the team, but he didn't have this commitment level that Josh Harris has. I think Josh Harris, he's the kid that somehow became a billionaire who remembers going to NFC Championship games at RFK. And his partners are also local guys, and they wanted to bring the team back to RFK.
If Dan Snyder was still the owner of the team, we would not be reading this news.
Right, he wouldn't put the money up. You're
there's
right.
No way he'd come out of pocket for that amount of money.
800-636-1067. I don't see how you could possibly see it as bad news that they would come to RFK unless you were super passionate about them being in Landover, Maryland.
Right. And who's super passionate about keeping them at the FedEx
Probably
field
not
site.
Many people, but a lot of people did look forward to going there, like Eric said, and just parking it, getting the cornhole out, getting the grill out. You know, bringing
That's part of the deal.
Yeah, and just partying for 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
I still have to think there's going to be some space for that.
Like, I think so, too.
I have a hard time believing that there'll be no tailgating allowed.
No, like, I think you're right.
I feel like at least some of the parking spots that are going to be on site will have some sort of tailgating element. I find it hard to believe that they're just going to say, no tailgating, we're doing away with one of the biggest traditions at basically every NFL city.
Are there people out there who hate it? Now, traffic-wise, you've got some metro access, but you drive past that site all the time. The parkway around there is horrible.
Well, that's where
part
the
of the
money,
$850 million
that's where DC's going to pony up and hopefully improve that infrastructure.
They better start working on it now because they've been working on the GW Parkway for about 2 years, and I don't know when that's ending.
Bring the wrecking ball over and knock over RFK. And I understand that's a long process. You got to get all the permits and the regulations. But that thing's been a freaking eyesore for years.
I mean, I drove right by it the other day, literally next, like 10 feet from it, and that thing is just a dilapidated dump. It's unbelievable
It was built in the 60s. Yeah. It's way outlived its usefulness.
So you sound like you're pumped.
I think that it's always advantageous when stadiums are downtown.
I would agree.
I like it in theory. I just think this site doesn't work great. But if they can make it work, great. I'm happy for everybody. I'm not going to be somebody that's going to 8 games a year there. I like to watch it in my house.
It's great that Harris and company are paying out of their pocket, but that also means they're going to pass along a lot of that financial burden
to the fans
and the season ticket holders. I'm sure that there are going to be PSLs attached.
You're going to pay for it.
Yeah, you're going to wind up subsidizing the new stadium at some point.
We're going to have Rick Snyder on at 7 o'clock, and he's of the mindset that until they actually start digging,
right,
he's not going to believe it. And there are still plenty of political hurdles which could stop the process because, look, the city is committing supposedly $850 million to it. Meanwhile, they're supposedly doing $410 million in budget cuts.
Right.
So on the one hand, they're having to cut the budget. On the other hand, they're adding $850 million to build a stadium.
Well, that's what they have to do to enable to do it. You're going to have to cut to come up with the money to do that.
Hey, Valdez, is your guy Wes Moore, governor of Maryland, in full-blown panic this morning? Is he just like...
He's probably rage lifting right now as we speak.
You're probably right.
All right, we'll bang out some of these calls. 800-636-1067. Listen, I think the sentimental part of everyone is excited for it to be back at the old site. I just think it's not perfect. But it'll be awesome. All these new stadiums, they just blow you away when you go inside. So that maybe will just carry the day. And I just hope that it's that the access is, you know, it's easy for fans to get to and from. That's always a concern.
86% of the early voters say they are pumped for the Commanders to be back at RFK.
From a PR perspective, the Harris group just can't hit more home runs. I mean, they're they're Babe Ruth.
They're crushing it.
They just come in and hit home runs every time.
Well, they also took over for the most incompetent owner in sports.
They did have the lowest bar.
True.
So but it wasn't very hard.
But their first coaching hire seems to be a home run so far. Their GM group, the home run so far. The quarterback they've drafted, home run so far. I mean, they're like whiffing on almost nothing. I mean, it's quite incredible what they've been able to accomplish. If they could get this into the end zone, as I think the guy that JP Finley talked to yesterday said, it's in the red zone.
They're in the red zone with this one.
And remember, we all were, you know, just kind of convinced that the Caps and Wizards were going to move to, you know, down the street in Virginia, right, Darlington or wherever the hell that group area
Alexandria
was. Alexandria. And that fell through. So it's never over till it's over.
This is still just a report. This is not a finalized deal by any stretch.
No, but it's growing steam. Yeah. There's a lot of people reporting.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Will in Stafford. What do you think? I think everybody, just from a sentimental standpoint, is pretty pumped about it. Will, what's up?
Hey guys. Good morning. You know, I'm excited, but I'm kind of reserved on it. I'm a season ticket holder. My buddies, you know, we all go, we tailgate. We've talked about for the last year and a half, you know, we're worried about PSLs. You know, I mean, 15, 20, 30 grand up front. They might implement it before 2030 to help get the construction rolling. You know, could cover it, but, you know, that'll sting a little bit. But the tailgate aspect, losing that, you know, I would assure you, same with you guys, none of us would want to take public transportation to an NFL game, especially, you know, living down here in Stafford. But, you know, going to the games as a kid at RFK, you know, was great. But I just don't know. I think I'd rather have Virginia or Maryland. I hate to be a downer, but, you know, that's my view. It would be nice to see Tailgate Ted lose his tailgate. I can't stand that guy. I think his tailgate is overrated.
So mean. Come on, why are you so mean?
Why do you hate him?
You're pro tailgate, but you hate Tailgate Ted?
I mean, all
Ted?
That guy does is, like, raise money for a lot of great organizations with his tailgates.
Why?
Like, he's a good dude.
Why?
Nah, guys. The real tailgate's in the red lot. All the guys that don't go to his tailgate, a lot of guys
he's
come to
tailgate
ours, man.
We have a
I didn't know that that's
it's like a turf. It's like a turf war.
I didn't know there was a turf war.
It's the Sharks and the Jets.
That guy on social media is so pompous. He pumps himself up. His food's horrible. His grill's disgusting. Like,
oh,
I mean, the Steak King EB pulled out a great steak, even with that terrible grill.
Thank you. Know, that is true.
Can't stand the guy.
That is true. Guys. Man, right. Thank you, Will.
I didn't know there was anti-tailgate Ted sentiment
out there. I didn't know that there was a rivalry. I didn't know there were tailgate rivals.
I
thought everybody were all at peace together.
Yeah, isn't tailgating like a big happy family?
I gotta say, isn't everyone coming together because of the team and unifying over one common goal?
A lot of jealousy.
That guy wants ADs.
Yes.
He's jealous of Tailgate Ted's AD deposits.
Oh, I know Tailgate Ted will be calling.
All right, let's go to Kevin.
Oh, he should fire back.
I mean, Tailgate's got to be upset if they're. I mean, I'm sure he'll find a little nook and cranny somewhere to tailgate, but
I don't think Tailgate Ted is a little more classier.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, well, definitely. Yeah, by the way, if there's no tailgating, that completely disrupts his brand. His brand needs
it's over. Disrupts his life.
He needs to go back to the drawing board.
He'll be pregame Ted. Pregame Ted.
Food truck Ted. That's all. You can maybe also work with that.
Maybe.
Ted, you might want to go workshop some things.
Look, I think, like you say, how can they stop tailgate? People are just going to pop their trunk and they're going to tailgate. Yeah. But this. If you just don't have that area, that communal area where thousands of people can kind of do it together.
How much surface parking will be available? That's a huge question.
Chick-fil-A platter, Ted. Yeah.
Chick-fil-A nugs, Ted. Yeah. Oh, those are always a hit. If you show up at any event with a big-ass tray of Chick-fil-A nuggets, you're looked at like a conquering hero. You just are.
They pointed to the Viking Stadium when we talked about this a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. And if you look outside where the Vikings play, which I believe is US Bank Stadium, there's an area where they can have 3,000 guests, where they can have concerts and people are out there. So it's not tailgating. in the sense of you have an
but
RV.
That's not even that much. Yes. Like 3,000 out of 60,000.
Okay, but there's tons of people milling around, having food,
but that
with
means
different
95%
stands.
95% of people can't participate in that.
Like well, 3,000. They're going to have to get used to it.
They're just going
to
have, you know what?
Well, that's a deal.
That's just the communal space. People still tailgate in the parking garages and things like that.
Yeah. It's just going to be different.
It'll
it's
be
just
different.
Be weird.
It'll be different.
But, you know, I'm excited for the fancy new stadium. Those are always cool. Although it doesn't really matter. It impact the play on the field, which is ultimately all that matters.
Well, where it can impact the field is the home field advantage. Can you build up a home field advantage? Now, they were starting to do that towards the end of the year.
I think they can. You win.
Trussway talked about the Falcons game being a turning point, that they came out of the locker room, and that's somebody who's been here through all the terrible losses, and he said that the crowd really helped them win that game.
Yeah. You win, they'll come. Kevin Lanham, what's up, buddy? 800-636-1067 if you want to chime in. Are you pumped? Are you a little more cautiously reserved about it, or are you just totally against it? Kevin, what's up?
Good morning, Junks. Thanks for taking my call, as usual.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, I'm from Lanham, and that stadium is right in my backyard.
Yep.
I'm kind of against it because of all the traditions and all the stuff that we're going to miss, like the tailgates. The other gentleman just talked about the PSLs. I've been following all these new stadiums. They're putting in less seats, and it's like in my youth, I couldn't afford these tickets.
Hold
now
on, Kevin. Mike, hold on. You're going to miss the tradition of FedEx Field? Are you?
No, he said the tailgate.
He's just like the tailgate.
Okay. Listen. I'm talking about I'm not talking about the losing or the dilapidated stadium. I'm talking about the camaraderie, the fandom. Even players coming out to the tailgate after games and coming in and cohorsing with us.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm an adult and I can afford these tickets, now you're going to have to pay a king's ransom just to afford it. It's going to be a battle between the haves and the have-nots with these new stadiums. Mm-hmm. They're going to have less seats, and you're going to have to buy license just to buy season tickets. And I was like, I was dreading that. And then on top of it, when you go into FedEx Field, there's four lanes to go in and it's still traffic. Mm-hmm. How many lanes do you think DC is going to make to go to RFK?
Well, they're going to try and alleviate it with public transportation.
Yeah, but I hate
as much as they can. Yeah.
I do hate that.
Yeah, if you don't like public transit, you're not going to enjoy going to the stadium.
Yeah. Thanks,
look, there's a give and take.
Thank you, buddy.
There's a give and take.
Yep.
Yeah.
You get the nostalgia of the old RFK site. You got to potentially give up some tailgating, and you're going to pay some high prices. That's just the.
I'm afraid
we already pay high prices. Like, it's not going to be new. It's going to be higher prices.
It's going to be more.
That happens all the time.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I think I've seen people pay as much as $100 for parking now.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm a proponent of the public transportation.
I saw a sign for parking at Nats Park, $100.
Right.
The regular season Nats game.
It's nuts, isn't it?
I thought I can believe it. I can remember it being like 50 if you'd park like right across the street or right there or whatever. Is it up to 100 now?
I mean, the sign that I saw like last week.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think people are going to be, remember, it's not going to have that same charm. It's not going to be RFK. It's not going to be rocking. You know what I mean? The stadium's not going to be like shaking.
Well, that's because they used to have cheap aluminum bleachers.
Yeah, I know. But that's what part of the charm of it was. I can remember still, I mean, Xfinity Center, whatever they call it these days, is cool. It's nothing like Cole. Cole Fieldhouse destroyed it. And it's not the same. It's more sterile. It's
bigger.
It's bigger. Yeah. It doesn't have the same vibe.
No, but it's bigger and newer.
But it's newer. Yeah.
But you're going to have the top of the line video screens.
Yeah.
And I'm sure whatever architect is in charge, you know, at one point there was a guy that wanted to build a moat.
I love
that they're going to maximize.
Wow, that was Bruce Allen after drinking.
They're
going to
maximize the sight lines. They're going to maximize the sound.
It's just not going to be the same.
Sure.
But that's cool. As long as people are happy, if the vast majority of people are happy, that's a home run.
Well, I mean,
the
people who live in the city, I don't know how happy if you're living in the city because you're going to get taxed. Because half the money coming from the city is going to be from taxes.
Right, of course.
And that's going to be paid in installments. So I can't imagine everyone's going to be happy about that. We don't care because we're not going to be going to the games and we're not going to be getting taxed. But
I'll go to some games.
DC residents, they're going to get taxed.
Yeah, but we'll angle for free tickets. That's that is the
that's for sure. And parking.
That's the way.
No, I know you'll two games this year.
I know you'll go to some of the
and you're
games,
right,
JP,
they were free.
But you're not going to go. You know, once you're not going to go each game.
You're not going to go to eight a year. You're not going to be a regular.
You're welcome to weigh in on the reports that the Commanders and DC are close to a $3 billion deal to return the Commanders to the RFK Stadium. Site 800-636-1067. Don't forget, Rick Snyder will join us at 7. He's a little bit of a skeptic, so he'll give an opposing view. That's coming up at 7 a.m. here on The Fan.
B. Mitch and Finley, 1067 The Fan. Shout out to the stream, all the folks on YouTube watching us right now. See Captain Todd, Uptown Dre. Uptown Dre's fired up for the WNBA draft tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Sticks got the third, the fourth, and the sixth picks.
Yeah, you get your whole team with that.
That's a lot, right? let's hope it works out well for the Mystics. We'll have somebody tomorrow to recap.
That many first-round picks, that high. Damn.
I don't know. I did want to get to some NFL stuff here, though. Brian.
Yep.
Remember months back, maybe weeks back, we heard that, like, and I feel like we kind of heard about this like a year ago, but there was some talk of like ESPN buying NFL Network or merging or acquiring. Mm-hmm. Remember that conversation?
Yes. Happening now?
Well,
or not happening.
I don't know, but I know that Peter Schrager just went from NFL Network to ESPN in a very like, it seemed like a very positive, everybody was like, oh, congrats. Like, there was no animus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Rap Sheet just tweeted this out. The ESPN NFL Network crossover event this week in advance of the NFL draft, where Mel Kiper is going to be on NFL Network. Daniel Jeremiah is going to be on ESPN. Just kind of curious. Maybe they've done this before. I don't know, but it.
I don't remember it.
Me either.
So
seems kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's about. I don't, that's a, whatever the play is there is like a money thing. The only real area I would question is these like really high up, like Rappaport and Schefter. I don't know what their relationship is. I don't want to speak to it. That's a very competitive situation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think everybody else can kind of coexist, whatever. But I would find pretty interesting.
It would probably still have that competitiveness. But you don't want to. Normally, when you're competing against somebody, all of a sudden now you're on the same team. What happens?
Well, and I think at ESPN.
And do they lean to one guy or the other?
At ESPN, you know the hierarchy, right? Like Schefter's at the top, and then you got Graziano and Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Diana used to be there. She does her own thing now. And then you have all the people that cover specific teams.
Yeah.
John Keim in our town. But like, if they end up over there, they're not bound. There's no hierarchy that we've agreed to.
No.
And there's no structure.
No. You don't know that.
Yeah. And maybe that. Big old paycheck could always have an impact, too.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of things to discuss. Virginia safety Jonas Sanker has had a visit with Washington.
All right.
I believe Sanker is probably.
He mentioned him the other day. Somebody mentioned him.
One of the.
We had somebody on that was talking about him.
One of the draft guys we had on?
Yeah, but it was somebody locally that we knew.
Standing, maybe?
Might have been.
Well, I know he and I both had a mock with the East Carolina corner. This dude's a straight-up safety. I think you're talking a third or fourth rounder for Sanker. So something interesting to watch, certainly. But Washington's also bringing in two corners today.
Mm-hmm.
Today, maybe this week. What will you think be if the investments are into the secondary and not the D-line? Say it's Thursday and Friday picks.
Well, one helps the other. If the secondary has better coverage, they give the D-lineman more time to get to it. That may be their way of thinking. You know, we got to remember the Legion of Boom, Dan Quinn in Seattle, his secondary was outstanding. That could be a way of doing it. Or they may have enough confidence in some of the people that they have here now. Because I don't feel like you just say, oh, well, we got in the secondary now. We still go with it.
I think ideally you get somebody in there. You know what I mean? I still think you need edge, but I think because you pick so late, it's got to just be best player available.
Yeah.
And the only positions you're not going are tight end and quarterback. Yeah. Everything else is on the table to me. And that includes wide receivers, honestly. I think, you know, there's – so I did my, like, full five-round mock draft for Beltway football. Have I told you about my late-round draft crush?
Who is that?
This dude, Dante Thornton Jr.
From where?
He started Oregon and played, I think, the last 2 years at Tennessee. You know why I like Mr. Thornton, Brian?
Why?
4.3.
40?
Yeah.
What position? Your corner?
Receiver. Wide out.
See, all right.
Averaged 25 yards a catch for the Volunteers.
Okay.
It's a big play. Speed. Speed kills. And how many... Yo, he runs a 4.3 and he's 6.5.
Oh, damn.
That's just...
And you think about getting him in what round?
Fifth.
Will he stay that long? Will he be there that long?
They currently don't have a fifth, so I guess my hope is they get him at 205 in the sixth. You know, trying to project that stuff, it's hard to project the top 10, let alone what's going to happen in the sixth round.
Yeah.
Zuerlein from NFL.com has him as a fourth round projection. I mean, dude, he's just...
6'5 and 4'3. Somebody will talk themselves into picking him higher. Oregon and Tennessee.
Yeah.
Not like he's coming from a small school. You know, not like he's coming from a small school, but to have... to pick him up and put him down like that and be that tall.
This is a little random, though. 6'5... and his arms are 32 and an eighth inch. Isn't that kind of short for 6'5"? Doesn't that seem a little not proportional?
Yeah.
Right? Because most of these tackles are 6'5", but their arms are 33 and a half or whatever.
Yeah.
What's your hand size?
Me? 10 and a foot.
10 and a quarter?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I fear these hands sound kind of small.
What are your hands?
9 5/8.
Nah, that's big.
Okay. His athleticism.
He's built like Jeff. Big, tall guy with short arms and little hands.
Jeff out here looking like a T-Rex. this kid, 4'3", 40, 1.51 10-yard split.
That's running down.
Yo, his vertical's 33 inches. The broad's 10'6".
A tall dude like that, to be able to get moved that quick, he's not going to be there late in the fourth round or fifth round, Jeff.
I know one thing about my guy, Jeff. He's got a type. Jeff likes them tall receivers.
He likes them tall, and he'll predict them to have 5 touchdowns.
Now, I got to point out the weaknesses on this dude. He's not a – I don't think anybody's going to call him a polished route runner. It's called a 9 route, coach. But right. he can run some, like, deep crossers for you, too. But it's not – he's going to have to work on the tree.
He's a red zone guy.
Zuerlein writes, the value can be snuffed out by deep safety looks. The long strides are gradual and rounded on in-breaking routes. I hate when receivers round off the top of the route. That's why you never get across the safety's face, and a lot of times you're either going to get smacked or,
square that thing,
or the quarterback's not going to go to you. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Get that outside foot in the ground, drop the hips, get it straight across, brother.
I feel like he's, because he has that speed, there's not always a ton of burst, if that makes sense. But you get him running straight, ain't nobody catching him.
Got that right.
It's, I don't know, it's going to be fun to watch the draft. It's so great and different. Like when we walked in this morning and you had Orlovsky yelling about
the Steelers. And if the Steelers, what they're going to do, blah, blah, blah.
With quarterback.
And now there's all this talk. Did you see Dion tweeting about New Orleans?
Mm.
So now there's all this talk that the Saints are going to draft Shador,
okay,
at 9.
All right.
But now maybe the Steelers want him.
Hey, man.
I think it's all just a bunch of nothing.
Well, I just think if Dion's involved, it's a bunch of something.
Dion tweeted about New Orleans. So,
I'm a Buffalo fan. I need him to be tweeting about Colorado.
I got to be honest. This is incredibly bizarre. I just went to Dion's X account.
Uh-huh.
He follows me.
Really?
Yeah. That's cool. Thanks, coach.
Mm.
So, Dion tweeted, I have to remind myself of.
What?
I'm a huge believer in the draft process that you do not, you got to ignore everything that happens between January 1st and late April. Like, what you saw on the field is what should be your guiding principle with the NFL draft. Mm. And what we saw from Shador was always very good.
Yeah.
He was always good, dude.
Yeah. But people start those rumors, too, to try to get people to. It happens.
Totally.
Lion season, as I call it. I call it.
Barry Svrluga joins the program at 1 o'clock.
Those guys don't come on the market very often, right? Left tackles in free agency or any time, really. And picking 29, it's not like you're picking your top five and it's a sure thing or as close to a sure thing as you can get. So when you have an opportunity like that, and we really wanted to bolster the offensive line, and he's, you know, in our opinion, one of the best. You know, you can say he's top three, top, you know, two in pass protection. I think he's underrated as a run blocker too, and understanding too, we have people in that building that really vouch for him as a person, so we knew he'd fit in with our team. With
that's Adam Peters talking Laramie Tunsil after the big splash acquisition this offseason. Want to get into the Commanders' work on the O-line, how you feel about their group as they get ready for what is the final chapter of this offseason plan, the NFL draft, now 9 days away. We started by talking about Shador Sanders. Depends where you look. Some people have him going second and third overall. Others saying they're hearing he's going to fall out of the first round. Pretty amazing as we are a little over a week out for one of the faces of this class. Our buddy Guy Lorien tweeted us and said, I don't particularly care about what's going on with Shador Sanders. I just came here to say, man, is it nice to not have to worry about this. He said, to not have my team playing a part in it. It's true. The 100%. Commanders are out of the needing a quarterback bucket, so whether he's good or not, or a pain, or you're dealing with Dion, or you're not, it's not Washington's problem.
There are no questions. It's no, can Carson Wentz be okay? This guy that's unproven, Sam Howell, is that going to work out? What about Heinicke? Those stupid questions, those big wastes of time are over. We have one. Sorry. Well, let's get back to the, you know, the regular business of trying to build a football team, which is hard enough as it is.
Larry is in La Plata on Grant and Danny. What's up, Larry?
Hey, man, the question is, can he play? Yeah, he can play. But at the same time, you got to remember, we dealt with the Mannings, so you got to deal with the Sanders. I mean, it just is what it is. The guy, his father's a Hall of Fame player, if not one of the best players in the game of football, so You have to take it for what it is. And I mean, he's put it like this: he's able. His father should be able to criticize or not criticize the system because he played in the system.
Well, we'll disagree there. I mean, yeah, he can do whatever he wants, but whether I want to deal with that as a person involved on the coaching staff is a different situation. I mean, by that standard, are you critiquing the Little League coach with every move they make because you played baseball in high school? Probably not.
That's funny because I do.
Yeah, so we will just
appreciate you there.
Live our lives a little differently.
Well, so
I guess.
I know what you're saying. Like, if the point is it was ridiculous when Eli Manning made that pouty face and refused to go to San Diego and insisted on a draft day trade to New York or whatever, yeah, that was ridiculous. I held it against him his whole career. I still think it was absurd to do that, but whatever. So if that's the point, then
I guess. I don't know. From an organizational perspective, from a team's perspective, if Sanders was so great, if he was like
Peyton Manning,
or if he was, I don't know, you could pick your 1-1 guy. If he was Caleb Williams, or if he was Andrew Luck, or if he was, you know, name that Trevor Lawrence in terms of that pedigree, you'd go to the caller's point. I don't give a damn what his dad says or doesn't say.
100%.
We will deal with it. This is
me, by the way, who I do not do the Deion Sanders act. Like, I'm not calling you Coach Prime. You know, that just, I'm not playing whatever the game is. Mm-hmm. I think he's an amazing personality. He was an unbelievable player, one of the greatest of my lifetime. And I saw a video circulating with him helping one of his players and talking about a pitch that he's got coming up in school. So he had him give it to the team. Yeah, I think he does some real good, too. Mm-hmm. But there's also so much baggage and so many of the, I'm bringing Louie and you can all get out of here. It's in a sense, it's like exploitative of all of the things I hate about college sports now, is like how he's running the program. And he's not alone in this. He's just one of the ringleaders in college sports, getting worse and worse. But I digress. For me, it's just about the celebrity distraction part of it. I don't want to deal with it. Now, when he comps him to the Mannings, like Arch Manning's going to be coming out next year. If Peyton Manning is as much of a attention-seeking, opinion-giving dad as Deion Sanders has proven to be, then I would probably be out on that too. But he's not. Like, you know, and by the way, I understand that that's not his kid. It's Cooper's kid, mm-hmm. and he's the uncle. But my point is, I don't view him as that. He occasionally gets asked about him. He gives an opinion. Maybe it's a little different because Deion's the coach. But I think people that have followed Arch Manning versus Deion, they're both kind of famous for being famous. Shador, whatever. Shador, again, I'm team Shador Sanders as a player. I actually think he gets undervalued. Yeah,
I think he's a first round. I would take him in the top 10, probably.
I would too, if I could have a heart to heart where I mm-hmm. said, I need you to run my entire building, man. And that's the part I just don't know. I've never sat down and talked with him. Can he be the CEO? I don't know. Can you not be doing a TV show with your dad where you're calling out your wide receiver from Sunday's game because he dropped two passes? I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Peyton, for all of his media ventures, is doing that kind of thing.
Right. Now,
so I don't think the comp is good.
Yeah, from the Manning cast on Monday night, you know, after week one, they're shredding whoever takes Arch and calling their offensive scheme simplistic and questioning this, that, and the other thing. We could have that same conversation.
Yeah,
I just think it's a different thing.
Everything's a building up and positive, and you know, they do their little jokes. Some of them are not that funny, but they wear their little sweater vests. It's there's not anything divisive about it. You know what I mean? It's kind of this like feel good. Everyone's here to be happy. You're not going there because they're going to be crushing anybody. And I don't know if that's how it's always going to be with Deion. I don't remember Peyton Manning taking anything that the teams that his nephew's been on or Eli's on to task for play calling. You know what I'm saying? It's not the character. His whole shtick is like Cal Ripken Jr. The perfect guy. I've got a team of PR people, 9 people around me working all the time to make sure that my flaws, because everyone's got them, don't get out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know, the whole living my truth loudly thing is not really what he's about. And just that ability to play the game would make me feel a little more comfortable with someone in his family being on my roster. But I just can't wait to see what happens in 9 days.
It is fascinating.
If you're telling me he goes third to the Giants or he doesn't get drafted in the first round, I'll tell you he goes third to the Giants. Because, again, I think him falling out of the first round would be a joke.
I just don't see that. I don't. Like, he's a first-round quarterback. And to the caller's point, someone's going to say, whatever the distraction, whatever it is, that's worth it to us. Because you want to call it desperate enough, or this is such an important position and that guy can spin it. There's a lot to like in that skill set. He's going either to New Orleans at 9. I still think Pittsburgh might trade up to get him to prevent that from happening. But to me, he's going in the top 10 somewhere.
I do wonder if he'll ever stop taking so many sacks, because I do just think he is a huge bodied, cinder block footed, like stand there, take on contact, make big boy throws. I just think it's always going to be part of it. And when you do what he did in college in terms of the sacks, we talked P2S percentage a lot last year. It doesn't normally change a ton, and he doesn't have the Jaden Daniels ability to run out of the pocket or to, you know, he'll leave some, but he's mostly what I want, which is a pocket passer. But you got to get the ball out quicker than he has in his career. But just so many reports, different directions, pretty crazy to see. All right, on the offensive line for the Commanders, you heard the clip from Adam Peters coming into the segment. I mentioned this to you yesterday. Mm-hmm. Washington ranks eighth among how much teams are spending on their O-lines right now for the 2025 season. Only the Panthers at $95 million, the Chiefs at $81-plus million, and then the Giants, Bears, Vikings, Lions, and Broncos are spending more than Washington. And in fact, the Commanders are on the verge of the top five. They've spent $61 million on the line. The team at five is the Vikings at 64. At four is the Bears at 66. So they're kind of in that range. There's only two teams that have made a substantially more obvious commitment to the O-line, and that's the Panthers and the Chiefs, who have young quarterback Bryce Young and then the guy of all the guys that you want to protect in Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City coming off of a Super Bowl loss because of their line, you know, not being able to protect, essentially. But I bring this up to say, have they done enough for you guys? You know, that was one of the big talking points for the fan base going into the offseason was, you got to make this offensive line better. Well, they went out and got one of the best left tackles in the National Football League. They have also brought in a potential contributor on the interior, I guess, if you think any of the guards that they signed, like Nate Herbig from Pittsburgh, are going to play. But for the most part, right now, you could make the case it's like one new starter. Andrew Wiley at right tackle. You got Biotish at center, who played really well. Laremy Tunsil at left tackle. Brandon Coleman's going to move over and hopefully upgrade, you know, another position. They're going to give him a chance at tackle to compete with Wiley. Maybe he wins that job. I kind of think he ends up at guard. But regardless, you've changed two positions because Coleman's changing spots.
Uh-huh.
But they really only added one new starter. And with the financial commitment, it says it's top 10. How do people feel about what they've done? Are you confident it's going to be a strength now?
I don't think it's a strength yet. I think it's improved. I think it's better.
So you're probably then one interior starter away from strength?
That's where it is for me. I think they got a lot better. I think they got away with it last year. And again, this has been my theme for this offseason is I don't want to get away with it again. I don't want to count on magic again. I don't want to count on unsustainable, once-a-generation type things from happening. Again, they played ball control without a running game for the last eight games. Like, you can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of things that went their way that I don't think are repeatable and sustainable. This offensive line, I think, was maybe better than the sum of their parts last year. I think that was scheme. I think Daniels helped. I think weak opponents helped. I think a number of things went their way that I wouldn't count on. It's better. I think it's now probably fine or okay. I want it to be a strength, though. And that, to me, probably means one more guard. It means, you know, if Coleman sticks at right tackle and can really do it, as good as he say as he played at left tackle as a rookie, which I thought he held his own, wasn't great. I don't think he was bad, though, by any stretch. Now you've upgraded two spots. If you now have something, you know, sort of brewing there, I think you could actually be good and have it be a plus.
The other sneaky thing, too, when you mentioned the Cosme injury, is because that happened in the playoff game, like the second-to-last game they played,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, in terms of the week one starting offensive line, it's like losing someone in free agency, as you look at it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, yeah.
So, yeah, you went and got a left tackle in Tunsil. You're better there. But you're worse at right guard, where you had a really good player. He was your best lineman before Tunsil. Now he'll be your second best lineman. I watched him walk around Capital One Arena in an Ovi sweater, watching Ovechkin tie the record a couple weeks ago. He's moving pretty well. Very different than anchoring and playing.
Sure, sure.
But hopefully he's going to be ready, you know, a month or so into the season would be ideal. But that injury complicates things too. But if they were a C-, let's say, at the end of the season, they're probably not higher right now than a B-.
That's what I've got,
yeah. You know, a little above average.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the 10 to 16 range. So is it a strength? No, but they've gotten better, and they could still address that if they draft someone early enough. They just don't have a lot of picks. So unless they trade back, it's hard to fathom that, you know, he's starting guards walking through that door in the next 10 days in the NFL draft.
So a week from tomorrow night, Lambeau Field, Green Bay, that's where the draft is this year. That will be an excited fan base for the draft. You know, deadlines make deals. Not that there is a contract deadline to discuss, but I think there is a trade deadline to discuss, and it is the Trey Hendrickson trade deadline to discuss. So it's now 2 months since Cincinnati and Trey Hendrickson said, all right, you don't want to be here. Go seek a trade partner. Go find somebody that will give us at least a first rounder, if not more, and pay you the roughly $30 million a year that your, you know, league leading sack total of the last 2 years should command, even at your age. And they haven't found a willing partner yet. And so the move back to, well, maybe you'll stay here. You know, we got Ja'Marr Chase and we got T. Higgins signed for the long term. We're able to structure those contracts, which gives us more room here in this year. We're going for it. We don't want to lose our best pass rusher and our best defensive player. We think if everybody stays healthy, we can be a Super Bowl contender in the AFC next year. But they haven't gotten close on a deal, according to reports. So Trey Hendrickson's kind of hanging out there in the wind right now. He's not close, according to reports, to a deal with his own team. And he hasn't found, he and his agent, haven't found a team willing to either give up a first plus to Cincinnati and pay him $30 million a year, or perhaps neither one of those two things. He's found out that whatever he's worth, it's not what he thought he was worth. Washington has reportedly been, and I believe this to be true, a team that has been interested in Trey Hendrickson. I think they would have really been interested in Myles Garrett had he ever made it to market, and I think there would have been an absolute bidding war for Myles Garrett. I do not consider Trey Hendrickson to be in that same class, although he is a great pass rusher and a really, really good player. But you're going to have to pay him. So to give up a first and third and then pay him a top three, you know, edge rusher, you know, defensive end salary, you're not giving up a first or third. But what happens in these things is that Washington and other teams say, no, we're not willing to give up a first and a third. Washington, by the way, doesn't have a third rounder. They have a third rounder next year. They have a second rounder now. But whatever the first plus equivalent to a first and third would be, they're not willing to give it up. Other teams haven't been willing to give it up. I would not be surprised if Washington would be okay with the contract extension and what the value for him would be in terms of making sure that you had a player under contract for the next 4 years at a number that he's happy with and that you can deal with from a salary cap standpoint. Now, if something's going to happen between now and the draft, either Hendrickson's going to get a long-term deal signed with Cincinnati, or he's going to get traded. I think we're down in that window between now and, say, probably sometime on Wednesday, probably not the day of the draft. We've seen less and less happen the day of the draft, more and more happen the day or two before the draft. But if something's going to happen trade-wise, it's going to happen before the draft because Cincinnati is going to want the picks in this draft. They're not going to want the deal done afterwards and have picks given to them that start in 2026. I have no idea how this works out. I really thought when Chase and Higgins got wrapped up, I thought there was a really decent chance that Hendrickson would stay in Cincinnati. But that's not what, you know, has happened. And in fact, you know, some of the reporting and some of the comments by Hendrickson in particular have indicated that they've grown further apart. Does Cincinnati really want to deal with a potential holdout situation post-draft and before training camp or before week one of the regular season? I think the opportunity of waiting Cincinnati out, which I think teams like Washington and others who are interested in Trey Hendrickson, this has been the plan all along. Unless Cincinnati budged first, they were going to wait Cincinnati out and wait for them to get desperate to make a deal and to lower their price right before the draft. I do think Washington dealing a second and a fourth, or, you know, a second and, you know, next year's third, is in play for Trey Hendrickson between now and next Thursday. I think that's something to totally keep an eye on in terms of, you know, newsmakers out there. the Schefters and the Rappaports of the world. Hopefully somebody local. That would be nice to break that news. But it would not surprise me if between now and a week from today that Trey Hendrickson is traded. And if he is, Washington is interested. Will they be the team that offers the most? Well, I mean, at least they're sending him to an NFC team and not an AFC competitor. So there is that advantage. And then you would work on the contract extension right away. I'm wondering what they're waiting for in terms of the Terry McLaurin contract extension. That has to happen before the season starts. Maybe part of it has to do with there's another big contract out there for them to get through. All right, up next, we shift gears and talk about the Nationals, who have actually played very competitively here to start the season. Andrew Golden covers the team for the Washington Post. He'll join us next.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan. Wanted to bring up a couple of Commanders topics. So we are less than 2 weeks away from the NFL draft, and we'll be ramping up our draft talk here in the coming days. Should I start with an interesting one or a tragic one?
Let's start with the bad news first.
All right, so a lot of people have seen this story about the passing of LSU receiver Kyron Lacy.
Mm-hmm.
Kyron Lacy was 24, receiver at LSU. Jaden Daniels was tight with him. Apparently he went to Instagram and had a reaction to the passing of one of his close friends. But Lacy was about to be on trial, right?
Yeah, because he was involved with a traffic collision. A
fatal car accident.
In January.
Yeah.
I think it was January 10th. And he passed another car, sped by him, and there was it caused a head-on collision, and a 78-year-old passenger died.
Right. He killed a 78-year-old man.
Yep. And he fled the scene. Lacy fled the scene, didn't call 911, and he was arrested 2 days later.
And so Lacy committed suicide, which is terrible.
Yes. He's obviously had some issues.
Yeah, I guess the sheriff's office said it was called out to a weapons disturbance from a relative of Lacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he discharged the weapon, got into his vehicle, was pursued by authorities for, I think it was 15 or 20 minutes.
Right.
And then he crashed, and then when they came upon the crash scene, they realized he had shot himself in the car they could get to him.
During his 2 years playing with Jaden, he caught 54 passes, 826 yards, and 7 touchdowns.
Right.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's
tragic.
You know, big part of that offense, friends with Jaden Daniels, and then just unfortunately has this situation. And
I think that
decides to commit suicide.
Lacy's dad had, I don't know if it was on social, but he said, you just need to stay in touch with your kids because you never know what's going on in their heads, especially if you don't see them or talk to them for a while.
Young parents, start talking to your kids at a very early age and make sure they are confident and comfortable confiding in you. Mm-hmm. Don't be cool with, I'm all right or I'm good, mm-hmm. when you know deep down something isn't right. And he went on and on.
Mm.
Sad story.
Yep.
Very sad.
Very sad. I mean,
and I don't know where Lacy was projected to go in the draft.
Not
but,
sure.
I know he was at the combine. And, you know, he probably would have been drafted by somebody. But although who knows about what would have happened with the
legal case.
The legal case, yeah. He might have gone to jail. But it's tragic.
And imagine even if, like, the trial went his way,
mm-hmm.
just living with killing somebody else.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure that probably played a big role in him deciding to kill himself. Like, he probably had a lot of guilt from killing that person in an auto accident.
Yeah.
I mean, some of his actions right afterwards didn't seem like it. I mean, he caused a hit and run, fled the scene, had to be apprehended later. But, I mean, if you're involved in an accident that winds up killing somebody, I'm guessing most people are going to have that guilt on their conscience. It's a tough thing to move past.
I'm sure he was tight with Malik Nabers. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he was tight with Brian Thomas from Jacksonville. Yeah,
yep.
I mean, a lot of guys are probably affected by it, including Jaden. So we got that, you know, out there. So
all right, so the interesting one, I think will make Cakes happy is apparently Ryan Fitzgerald is one of the top kicking prospects out of college, was a kicker for Florida State. And he's drawing serious interest from NFL teams ahead of the draft. One of those teams that apparently we'll have a kicking session with is the Washington Commanders.
I mean, it just makes all the sense.
He had a private workout with the Patriots. He's also looking at to do a private session with the Ravens.
I mean, I know they re-signed Zane Gonzalez to a one-year deal, but how confident can you be in him? You should always have competition up and down your roster, not just a kicker.
Well, the Commanders used Cade York last year.
Mm-hmm.
They used Greg Joseph. They used obviously
Seibert.
Austin Seibert.
Yep.
And Zane Gonzalez.
I mean, I'd argue Seibert was the main guy.
So they used four kickers in games.
Seibert was very good up until he got injured, and he was the one that missed the extra point against the Cowboys, correct? That was Seibert. That was a Seibert miss.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, that was a brutal miss.
So they're not completely 100% sold on Zane.
I mean, nor should you be.
Yeah, and Fitzgerald was a really good kicker in college. I think I have his stats here in front of me. He made 98%, 78% of his actual field goal attempts and 98% of his extra points. Now, the extra points are a lot closer.
Right.
But 58 of his 74 field goal attempts, including a 59-yarder. So, he's one of the best kickers in the country.
The cyber thing is mysterious to me because, all right, he was injured.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Zane Gonzalez was like the Band-Aid for Seibert, right? And then Zane Gonzalez didn't even hit that many field goals if you look towards the end of the season. Seibert was 27 for 30 in 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
He was 8 for 8 on 40 to 49-yard field goals. So it wasn't just gimmies. Now, he had a bunch of chip shots in there, too. Now, his weakness was the over 50 where he was 2 for 5. But those were his only misses. And then you throw in, I guess, the extra point. He did miss 2 of those.
Oh, he missed 2 in that game.
I don't know if it was just in that game. He was 22 for 24 on extra points.
Okay.
Anyway, I thought, they were all Band-Aids in reality because of what happened with McManus. You're sleeping, it all started with McManus.
McManus, that's true.
McManus, and then, Cade York and Joseph and Seibert, and might even be missing one.
So I'm reading
from, like, there was 5.
From PFF, Seibert returned.
Greg Joseph.
Seibert came back for the Week 12 game against the Cowboys. He missed a field goal in both extra point attempts.
Yeah. You're missing, and I might be wrong, but it was like a Middle Eastern guy.
Yeah, but I don't think he actually kicked in a
no,
game.
No, but he was on the roster for a while.
Yeah, I'm getting
his name. It was like training camp fodder.
His name's right there in my brain, but I can't quite pull it.
I want to say he kicked in the preseason.
I think you're right. But he only lasted like a day.
But you can't use one. Like, they don't have many picks. They can't use a pick on a kicker, can they?
No.
They're not going to do that.
You don't burn like a fifth, sixth, or seventh round pick on a kicker. You find those guys out on the street. How many times? I've been saying this for years.
I know, but if you can get a silly.
These guys are so expendable and or I thought they were easy to find. Apparently not as easy to find as I thought. Kickers are expendable. Adam Peters is not going to start burning draft capital on kickers and punters. If he does, I'm going to start raising an eyebrow. I'm going to put him in the crosshairs if he starts doing that.
I realized that they had to make a move because of what happened with Brandon McManus. But I think he had a pretty good year when Green Bay signed him.
He did have a good year.
So he certainly would have been their
guy. Numbers, but he was pretty good from what I remember.
He would have been your guy for Commanders fans. He would have been your guy.
We were sleeping on Ramiz Ahmed.
I am officially sleeping on him. You're correct.
How about Riley Patterson?
That name definitely rings a bell, too.
I'm just going back to what they were doing. Cade York, Ramiz Ahmed, Riley Patterson, they were brought in. Man.
Yeah, Patterson might have kicked in the preseason. Or maybe just in camp.
I don't know. I could see you using like a 6th-round pick, Cakes. If you're getting like the best collegiate kicker who you believe is going to be your kicker for the future.
All right, maybe a late-round pick. Maybe I could live with that. By the way, McManus,
I'm not saying be like the Raiders who took Janikowski in the first round.
McManus was 95%. Now, he started in late October.
11 games.
95% of his kicks.
So he made...
Okay, but Seibert was right there.
He missed one field goal, and he made every extra point.
Right.
He was pretty damn good.
He was very good. And I think, but I think the Packers gave him like a long-term deal. I think toward the end of the year, he signed an extension with them.
Yeah.
They're like, we're not letting you go.
Well, look, he would have been the guy. But
right.
They had to make a move. I get it. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see if Zane can last the entire season. I would bet not. But we'll see who they bring in. Maybe it's this Fitzgerald kid.
And then if it doesn't work out, you bring back a donk like Seibert.
Yeah, then you just
bring... Because there'll be guys out there. I mean, remember, Seibert had 7 field goals in one game.
You bring back just the one of the litany of recycled kickers that are always looking for gigs. Just figure it out. Adam Peters, figure out the kicking situation.
Well, they thought they had it figured out.
Well,
they did.
Apparently, it's not figured out.
Do you have a vibe at all as to what Peters is going to do next Thursday?
No. You know why? Because he doesn't tip his hand like guys in the past that used to work here.
I thought your vibe was he was going to trade down.
I think he's going to trade out of the second round pick. I think he's going to keep the first round pick. I think he's going to move off 61, which is their second round pick.
Isn't it crazy? The NFL draft is
10 days away.
You know, basically a week away.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It's not as much buzz because other things have kind of supplanted it on the sports calendar.
Well, there's also less buzz because they're not picking number 2 overall.
They're picking 29, yeah. I mean,
but that's why there's less buzz.
That's all we were talking about last year.
Yeah, they're not picking
every single
top 5. Picking at 29 is boring, but that's the offshoot of having a playoff team, which is great. You'll take that trade 10 times out of 10.
I mean, usually we do a mock draft here on the show.
Right.
Because the Commanders are picking in the top 10 or mm-hmm. close to it.
Mm-hmm.
They're picking 29. I don't think we can do one this year.
Remember when we would do the mock drafts with people from each of the cities leading up to the Commanders pick? Imagine if we did it when they were 29.
Oh,
the nightmare draft would have to deal with.
Producers be scrambling. Matt and Matt, they would just be.
But we would do it when the Commanders picked like 12th or 13th.
They'd be doing fireball shots by about the 15th or 16th pick.
All right, got to take a break. If you want to chime in, you can always hit us up at Junks Radio on Twitter or give us a call at 800-636-1067.
I'm certain that throughout time, people have had this exact same feeling when they had to go into great conquest. It's what most guys think the Super Bowl experience will be like, but the Super Bowl pales in comparison to this.
I love that Doc clip. That was from the NFL's special Super Bowl champion series when he was part of the narration of the 82 Washington Redskins, the Super Bowl 17 champion Washington Redskins. Doc reflecting on what RFK Stadium felt like before the NFC Championship game against Dallas back in January of 1983. It, for those of us who remember it, it is kind of a hair on the back of your neck standing up kind of thing, for sure. And nobody's better at laying it out with more drama than one Richard Doc Walker. Good morning, everybody. RFK 2030. Here we go. The show today includes Mark Seagraves from NBC Channel 4. He broke this story on the stadium yesterday. The city and the team are closing in on a deal for the team to return to the RFK site in what would be a $3 billion plus deal, with the team picking up at least $2.5 billion of the cost. It seems like very good news. There may be a few hurdles. But we will talk to Mark Seagraves from NBC4 in about 20 minutes. At 12 noon today, Mike North will join me on the show. He was actually on my podcast yesterday, and I'm going to play it for you today. Mike's one of the key people at NFL headquarters in New York who puts together the NFL schedule. Anybody that is a schedule geek like I am, this conversation is for you. We're a week away from the draft. We are less than a month away from the schedule coming out, and that's a big deal for the league. It has generated a lot of attention over the last, I don't know, 10-plus years. It used to be sort of just put out. You'd read about it in the newspaper the next day, and then, I don't know, right around the turn of the century, it became more popular, and then about 10, 15 years ago, they started to turn it into a huge NFL television show. How does the league view Washington this year in terms of high leverage games, primetime games, in terms of the biggest spots on the NFL calendar? He'll answer that. What about Philadelphia on opening night? You know, the defending champs open up on Thursday night, September 4th. Is Washington a possibility for that game? What about Thanksgiving? What about Christmas? What about the international games? Brazil is a possibility because the Chargers are hosting on Friday night, September 5th, and Washington does have a scheduled road game against the Chargers. What about Madrid, where the Dolphins host that international game in November? Washington has a scheduled road game against the Dolphins. So what about all of those possibilities? Mike North from the league office, he is one of the key people in putting together the schedule. You'll hear my conversation with him at 12 noon. This from Richard to kind of open the show. Richard writes, Kevin, not even a day, and your NBA playoff suggestion blew up. Two games tonight, meaning last night, and both of them blowouts from the start. Thanks for nothing. This from Cedric. Cedric writes, Kevin, bad day to push the NBA playoffs. Two bad games tonight. Sacramento didn't even try. Looked like they were attempting to lose. Yeah, Richard and Cedric, you're both right. That was not good basketball last night. The night after, an incredible game between Golden State and Memphis. You're going to have nights like that. And it did look to me, you're right, Cedric, it did look to me like the Kings didn't care about winning or losing. DeMar DeRozan looked like he was trying. He had 33 in the game. But man, Anthony Davis was knocking down shots. When he is healthy, he's a top five player in the league. I mean, I think he is. He's right there. When he is healthy, in terms of a two-way player, he's definitely top three in the league. Offense, defense. The problem with him is, will he actually be upright for enough games? Or will he go down in a heap and, you know, limp off with a hangnail? That's the problem with Anthony Davis. Klay Thompson was on fire last night. Good for him. Dallas now plays Memphis on Friday night, with the winner advancing as the 8th seed in the NBA playoffs to face Oklahoma City. In the first game, man, I don't know what it is about the Miami Heat and play-in games, but they just win them. And they destroyed the Chicago Bulls last night. Neither game was competitive. Both of them were pretty much blowouts by the time you got to halftime. So they were boring. I ended up last night, and I'm going to save this probably for Monday, Max. I don't know why I did this. I usually do this like the weekend before the draft. The key positions in terms of what Washington's looking for, I'll sit there and just, you know, act like I'm a film expert by myself, which I'm not. But I watched 2 hours, almost 2 hours, of like highlight stuff from all of the edge rushers in the draft. Ooh. There are a couple that I love. And the guy that I've talked about for a while now, Mike Green, mm-hmm. he ain't making it to 29.
No chance. People, he's been getting mocked like inside the top 20, top 15 for the past couple weeks now. His stock has risen so quickly.
Yeah, he's really good. By the way, Abdul Carter is going to be a superstar.
A monster.
Terrified. He's going to be an absolute superstar. You saw that in college anyway. But there are a couple of guys that I definitely think are like guys at 61, or if they were to trade back and have multiple second round picks, depending on where they are, there are some guys that are really interesting. And there are some guys that clearly are excellent against the run, but not so good in terms of their pass rush ability. And then there are just some pure pass rush guys, and there are guys that, you know, just totally pop on tape. I mean, there's a guy named David Walker from Central Arkansas. I don't know if anybody's heard of him. I'm sure some of you guys that are really into the draft have watched him. Look, the level of competition is not great necessarily at the FCS level, but this dude is an absolute freak pass rusher. He never got blocked. I mean, he couldn't be blocked by anybody at that level. So I'll save a lot of that for Monday and next week. Look, I think there's a pretty good chance that edge is the position that ends up getting selected by Washington in the first round. That is the heavy odds choice. It doesn't mean it'll happen. You know, there are so many things, and I say this every year about this draft, there's just too much we don't know. You know, all of the personal stuff, the interview stuff, the due diligence stuff, we don't have any clue as to what these guys are as teammates, as culture, locker room guys. But in terms of just watching the tape and then looking at some of the combine stuff, which I think is overrated, but obviously it does elevate and drop guys depending on their performance. Like, to me, Jack Sawyer, Ohio State, really good college player, excellent college player. Man, he's unathletic when you just watch over and over again compared to his teammate. Anyway, we'll do much of that on Monday's show. Yeah, that's what I did last night for 2 hours. You know, when you become, you know, an empty nester, even though I do have one of my sons home now, and it's great to have him home because I have somebody to hang out with. But when you are kind of at that age where you are an empty nester, you got to find things to do. And that's what I did last night. I wanted to read this. It comes from Lawrence. Lawrence writes, Kevin, if the Commanders don't find a running back in this draft, Jaden's going to take a beating next year. You've already said he led the team in rushing 10 times, and that is unsustainable. B-Rob is an average back who can't stay healthy. Eckler is a good one, but a concussion away from retirement. And they clearly don't like C-Rod, as in Chris Rodriguez. Yeah, they need a running back, Lawrence. They definitely need a running back. There's no doubt. They're going to take a running back in this draft. They got to get the right one. Like, they got to get one that can play and can play next year. I've said this for about a month and a half, maybe longer. I think if you see a running back taken on night one, of course, you know, that's it for Brian Robinson Jr. If they take a back in the first round, that's it. I don't think he's on the roster next year. If they take one in the second round at 61, or if they trade back and pick up, you know, another pick. So on night two in the second round, I think that could be the end of Brian Robinson Jr. I definitely feel that way. It's not like it's a massive cap savings. It's like $3 million plus. $3.3 million maybe is the number, if I recall. But I just think that they are looking for... Look, I think part of the reason for Deebo Samuel is just the weapon that he is. I think they're going to use him in the backfield. We'll see Deebo lined up in the backfield with Jaden, you know, standing next to Jaden running a lot of zone read. You know, Deebo will be phenomenal. He has not played with a quarterback that is true dual threat in his career. Garoppolo wasn't that. Purdy's not that. So that is going to be exciting to watch. But yeah, I'm with you. I think they're definitely taking a running back. I think if it comes on day three, you're just hoping. This draft is deep at running back. I've looked at a lot of the running backs. There is, I do think, some separation between Genty and maybe everybody else. I think Genty is like one of those backs that I'd be surprised if he's not a top five kind of running back in the NFL quickly. I think Hampton has that kind of ability from North Carolina. Travion Henderson's just a massive home run, big play, you know, guy. I mean, breakaway, game-changing speed. Love him. He's not a 20 back, a 20 carry a game back. I'm not even sure Hampton's that. Genty is. Genty's a three down back. Genty is going to get 20 plus touches a game from the jump. And every time you see these mock drafts now, he just keeps climbing. Doesn't he, Max? Like, is it possible that this dude goes in the top five? No worse than the Raiders at six, right?
Yeah, the Raiders is an interesting case because, like, there's so much they can do there, but you're not going to run Zamir White back out there, are you?
No.
So, yeah, it has to be Genty at the Raiders at the latest.
Yeah, this guy is going to be a top six pick in the draft. He's that good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other guys, I've talked about them for a while. Like, I really, really like Damian Martinez from Miami. I loved him at Oregon State. To me, he just, every time you watched Oregon State 2 years ago or watched Miami this year, maybe to a lesser extent this year, you saw a guy that guy's a pro running back. He's a guy that, you know, you get an offensive line and you get rolling, he could go for, you know, 22 for 160. You know, I like him a lot, but I think the two stars, there's one definite star in Genty. There's a potential star in Hampton. There's a potential game-breaking, you know, kind of, you know, not full-time back in Henderson. And then you got a lot of guys. I like Judkins, too. Then you got a lot of guys that, you know, could end up being great, but more likely than not will just be good. But Washington needs a back. Yeah, I get it. Lawrence, they're going to take a running back. They've got five picks. To me, it is even money that a running back is selected with one of their five picks. If they end up with just five, possibility they end up with more than that. But at 29 in the first round, Genty and Hampton are gone at that point. Genty's definitely gone, and I think Hampton's gone at that point too. I think both of those backs are gone. The over-under, by the way, on running backs in the first round is 2.5. So, that you know, if you're going over, you're predicting that Henderson or Judkins, probably one of those two, gets selected late first round. And I would guess that it would be Henderson. If there are three running backs taken in the first round, I'm going to guess that the third is Henderson. Just because the speed and the home run ability is tantalizing. That would be my guess. But there are going to be a lot of running backs taken in this draft, and there are going to be running backs that are taken as undrafted free agents. There will be a push for all of these guys that don't get selected, and if you don't get one, shortly after the draft. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, with respect to Jaden and the impact on Jaden, yeah, it would really help if two things happen, right? One, the O-line overall is better because we still don't know why they struggled to run the football with running backs. We don't know if it was the back. We don't know if it was the line. We don't know if it was potentially play calling. I'll tell you, in some of the zone read game last year, and we talked about this on after games, Jaden sometimes didn't make the right decisions. But you put a really good back there that can carry the load, and you can get, you know, four, you know, an average of three or four less carries from the quarterback a game. Yeah. You don't want him leading your team in rushing 10 times. You don't want that. I'm with you on that. All right. There was big news yesterday. You know, the news yesterday that Mark Seagraves broke is that DC and the team are closing in on a deal to bring Washington back to RFK. Now, I think this is something that we were expecting. We had Eric Flack last week on the show just to get an update because I was like, what's going on here? And Seagraves in his story referred to something that Eric shared with us last week, which is this looming $410 million in budget cuts that DC faces for the current fiscal year that were imposed by Congress. And that may have been something that slowed down the process. Because I think we kind of felt like, didn't we, that there was a framework for a potential deal long before it got passed. you know, before Congress, you know, left for the holidays in December. And Schumer was, you know, there at 2 a.m. in the morning saving it. But, I mean, I think D.C.'s been the favorite. This was interesting from a number of standpoints, including, you know, the idea that this is a $3 billion plus project. The team will fund $2.5 billion of it, probably minimum. The city will be on the hook for about $850 million of it. $500 million of the $850 paid out between 2026 and 2030. And then the other $350 would be paid through taxes generated from the development around the stadium to cover costs of what the city will be asked to do, which is to develop the stadium infrastructure. You know, we can ask Mark. Typically, I think that means roads, parking, et cetera. The team will be responsible for the residential retail mixed use around the stadium. This is going to be great for the city, ultimately. But there will be some battles, including from groups that will want, you know, the NIMBYs, the not in my backyards, yard people. There is a group already starting to push for a public vote on this. That typically doesn't go well when you get a public vote on a stadium. Most residents of cities aren't for giving billions of dollars to billionaire owners. Mark Seagraves with all of the information on Washington moving back to RFK when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.